Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
It's already 5:11. How did that happen? I'm Bob Surratt, and I am mad at myself today. I'm very disappointed. I was at that Heaven on 7 party celebrating 40 years of the Heaven on 7 restaurant in the Garland Building at Wabash last night. Very fun event. Great family success story, that restaurant and the Bannis family. And they had some good food and drink, and I left early, of course, because I wanted to get home, get ready for work, watch the State of the Union, do all of that. But I needed some dessert. They didn't have dessert last night, so I'm walking back to my car downtown. I'm passing a lot of places that I like. Most were closed. And I happen to like soft serve ice cream. I really like soft serve. So I thought, well, I know, I'll go to McDonald's, get a soft serve cone. I like their soft serve cones. So as I'm walking to the McDonald's, I pass a Baskin Robbins. And
oh boy.
So, yeah, I have no willpower when it comes to those things. So I went in there and got a cone, a couple of scoops, and had that. I figured that would help me drive home, pass the time. But you know what? I wish I would have got the soft serve cone. I mean, you know what the problem is now? There's so many ice cream places that are, what do they call these ice cream places? They're not designer ice cream. What's the term for these ice cream places that are all over the place now? But they're all so good. And so Baskin Robbins, I hadn't had one in a long time. And I don't want to say I was disappointed, but I was disappointed.
So, what flavor did you have?
I had, what did I have? I had a chocolate chip. And I had
two different ones.
Yeah.
Nice.
I had like a I don't remember what the other one was, but it was not memorable. It tasted sort of. Should I be saying this? Do they sponsor anything here on the station?
Baskin Robbins?
No.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
Okay,
then
they would.
Then I'll just say it tasted yeah. kind of chemical to me.
Oh.
But the McDonald's, and I was thinking all the way home, I wish I had a McDonald's soft serve cone. And then I actually was tempted to do it, but, you know, I didn't have the willpower to throw it out the window. Well, I wouldn't have done that. I would have tossed it neatly in a garbage bag. I didn't have the willpower. I thought, no, I can't do this. I can't have, like, two ice creams. So
you ate the whole thing.
So I ate the whole thing. I hate wasting a treat like that, wasting calories like that. You know, if you're going to do that, you better enjoy every second of it.
So why didn't you go back to the place we went in Andersonville on Clark Street, Georgia?
I should have gone there. Yes, exactly. Those are the kinds of places that's the new standard for ice cream. Yeah, George's. Where was that, on Clark Street?
Clark Street in Andersonville.
Well, wait, you two went out for ice cream together?
We
not exactly.
Yes, Mary, after the show, we ran up to Andersonville.
Yeah, had a breakfast sundae. No, we ran into each other at a restaurant a couple weeks ago. Well, now that I've gotten it out of my system, I feel better. Thank goodness for the therapy here. Sorry to take it out on you. It's 5:15.
We're kind of used to it.
here's the number here if you want to get in touch and, you know, get something off your chest. The phone number and text is the same, 312-981-7200. You can email us, bobshow@wgnradio.com. First caller on the radio gets a prize, as always. We'll get to that momentarily. Let's find out what Channel 9 is looking into here on the news beat for us is Courtney Guzman. How you doing, Courtney? Good morning.
Hey, good morning to you, Bob. You know, we're talking about the State of the Union address this morning. It was very interesting. A lot of controversial elements came out of that State of the Union. Just weeks after President Trump was impeached by the House, he stood in the room where it happened to deliver his State of the Union address. Now, he spoke to the country just the day before senators will likely vote to acquit him, effectively ending his trial. So first things first, when he was greeted, when he was brought into the chambers, the House chambers, the president took the podium, and he was welcomed by Republicans chanting, four more years, four more years. A lot of people are talking about the fact that it appears that he snubbed House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, refusing to shake her hand when he turned over the text of his speech. Now, despite being the first commander-in-chief to take up a presidential run after being impeached, President Trump laid out his vision for this final year in office of his term. The president vowed to support and sign a bill that would allow sanctuary cities to be the subject of lawsuits if undocumented immigrants commit crimes. He also vowed to protect the border. And in terms of health care, the president says he will protect patients with pre-existing conditions and back a bill that would rein in prescription drug costs. He also talks about backing another bill that would end late-term abortion. So a surprising first that happened last night, he presented the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the controversial conservative radio talk show host Rush Limbaugh. Limbaugh, of course, a fierce supporter of the president, frequently coming under fire for racist and sexist remarks. Of course, you know, Limbaugh just announced that he has stage 4 cancer, lung cancer, that is. And the first lady actually draped him with that distinguished award. He was presented it right on the spot. It was a surprise. He had no idea it was coming. But I think the most controversial thing that happened was after the speech was all said and done, this is what everyone has been talking about today, is House Speaker Nancy Pelosi actually took the text copy of the speech that the president gave and ripped it up right behind his back. On the way out of House chambers, as she left the floor, she told reporters it was a manifesto of mistruths. That's why she did it. Interestingly enough, there were some Democrats who boycotted the president's State of the Union. And, of course, we know that later this afternoon, senators will be voting, likely acquitting the president, and he can plow forward to his presidential campaign.
You know, when I heard that Nancy Pelosi ripped up her copy of the president's speech, I thought that that happened as President Trump was walking out, but it happened right up there on the podium when he was still up there, right behind him. I saw the video early this morning, and she said, she said it was the courteous thing to do considering the alternative. That was her line.
That was one of the things she said. She said that, and she also said it was a manifesto of mistruths, and that's why she ripped it up. It was very dramatic TV, I will tell you, as I watched it last night. I couldn't believe it. I said, did she just? I almost played it back, but I knew what I saw because she did it twice. She had two sections of papers. She ripped the first, put it to the side, ripped the second, and then she put it down, and then she moved it. So you could tell, you know, oh, yeah, she ripped up his text. It was very dramatic TV to play out during the State of the Union. And also note that never once did President Trump mention his impeachment during his State of the Union address.
Right. I don't know how you feel, but no matter whose side you're on, you kind of have to be depressed at the lack of civility and the division that we have now. It's gotten me down. We're going to talk to Lynn Sweet about that. She's the Washington bureau chief for the Sun-Times. She has some interesting behind-the-scenes gossip about the State of the Union. We'll get to that a little after 7. And if you can't be around for that, if you go to WGNRadio.com later in the day, they post our entire show as a podcast. What's up for you now, Courtney?
Bob, I'm going back in to do some more hits to talk about the State of the Union. And as you mentioned, it was interesting. It was very divided. Lots of applause from Republicans, standing ovations, not so much from Democrats who pretty much remained in their seats, groaning, rolling eyes. I mean, it was very divided. You could see it straight down the middle of the room.
Yes, as a famous newscaster once said, that's the way it is. Thank you, Courtney. Have a good day.
All right. Thanks. Thanks so much. Happy Wednesday.
It's same
worth,
to you.
Worth noting, Bob, that the president, when he came out to give the speech, Nancy Pelosi extended her hand to shake his hand, and he gave her the cold shoulder, did not. He brushed her off on that and also attacked her several times in the speech talking about things in California. So it began early on.
Yeah.
Incivility began early on in that speech.
I saw that, and I know some people said, did the president just not see Nancy Pelosi extend her hand? But if you look at the video, he just didn't make eye contact with her at all, did he?
No, he did not.
All right, more from Steve in the newsroom coming up in about 5 minutes. Right now, let's talk to Bill on the South Side. Hey, you're caller one today, Bill. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
And you get a prize for being the first on the radio here. What brings you to the world at 5:26?
Well, actually, you're probably wishing you were in my spot. I'm lying here in bed talking to you.
Well, I don't know if
I'm retired.
I don't know if I'd like to be in bed with you, but I get what you mean. Yeah, I'd like to be sleeping.
Right. I know what you mean. I didn't mean it that way, right? But no, I just thought I'd just sit first caller. So let me give it a stab, and I made first caller. I've been retired from a job. It'll be 11 years or 10 years into this year.
What did you do, Bill?
I was, for 50 and a half years, I was a massage physical therapist at a big private club downtown. I won't say the name, but it was on the corner of Monroe and Michigan.
Yeah, one of those old line Chicago institutions, I bet.
Right. Well, if you know what's on the corner of Monroe and Michigan on the northwest corner, you know the building.
Well, I could use a little massage right now, but don't get any ideas, Bill. You just stay in bed by yourself. We'll get you a $50 gift certificate from Builder Supply Outlet. They're so much more than kitchen cabinets. Check out The Edge, their state-of-the-art kitchen and bath showroom in Broadview. Hold on, Bill. We'll get the information we need to get that to you, and then you can go back to bed.
All righty. Okay.
Hang on, Bill. Thanks for checking in with us this morning. 5:27 right now. And later on today, since the Boston Bruins are in town, we'll get my nephew on the phone with us and talk a little hockey. We'll do that before 9 today.
He was hard to book.
Yeah. Did he say, "No, I don't want to be on any show that my uncle hosts."
He didn't put it exactly those terms. They had a game last night in Boston, so they got in very late, as did the Blackhawks. So between Judd and Troy, they're going to be just wide awake when they're on with us.
I look forward to that. A few stories that caught my eye today. As far as business goes, Chicago has three of the nation's top hotels. Two Chicago hotels rank among the three best hotels in the country, according to a U.S. News & World Report annual ranking. The Langham Chicago came in at number two. The Peninsula Chicago, number three. U.S. News & World Report says these hotels rank highly due to consistent stellar service, memorable on-site amenities, and extraordinary accommodations. Four Seasons Resort Lanai in Hawaii came in at number one because of its countless amenities, ranging from sunset yoga to a world-class golf course, and because the hotel encourages guests to explore the property's idyllic setting. Doesn't that sound nice? The Langham, Chicago's ranking is a near return to the top of the chart. It ranked number one a couple years ago, but number seven last year. The Langham occupies the first 13 floors of what's now known as AMA Plaza at 330 North Wabash. The Peninsula Chicago and East Superior kept its number two spot, and the Four Seasons Chicago also snagged a spot in the top 10 this year, coming in at number nine. Other U.S. hotels in the top 10 in order of ranking: Aquilina Resort and Residences on the Beach in Sunny Isles Beach, Florida. Four Seasons Resort Orlando at Disney in Orlando. Rancho Valencia Resort and Spa, Rancho Santa Fe, California. Montage Kapula Bay in Lanai. In Lahaina, Hawaii. Kapalua. Four Seasons, Washington, D.C., and Hotel Emma in San Antonio, Texas. This is the 10th year U.S. News & World Report has put out rankings for hotels. Now, does this make you feel better just thinking about those resorts, or getting up at 541 and hearing about snow in the forecast, does this depress you? I'm sorry if it did, but I'm just trying to share the news with you. Now, I wonder if those top hotels also have done away with those nice little soaps and shampoos they used to give you. Everybody's putting it in these dispensers now, right, in the shower, right?
Right.
I guess to save plastic.
Body wash and shampoo,
yeah,
and those pumps.
Yeah.
I don't mind that.
I don't like it because I like to accumulate those for travel.
Well,
the little bottles.
Yeah, but
you
now you go to the hotels, so you've got the pumps.
Well, you think I'm going to take a pump?
I'm saying you don't need to take the little bottles.
Well, no, but I would do that not for hotel travel, but you know, if I was going somewhere else that didn't, you know, have those amenities. But
I just think of it as another thing we have to wipe off with a Clorox wipe. you know, in the hotel room, the remote, the light,
I know,
the charger.
Yeah, I know.
Now the dispensary.
One other business note here: Portillo's is going to open a new restaurant on the northwest side. Portillo's fans awaiting the opening of the chain's promised restaurant on the northwest side can rest assured it is still coming, but a year behind schedule. Portillo's a year ago announced plans to open their third city restaurant at Addison and Kimball, right on the border there between Avondale and the Irving Park neighborhood. It didn't happen, but the company says they're still going to do it, and it'll be almost 10,000 square feet with a Roaring Twenties theme, seating for about 280 people, and an outdoor patio, a parking lot, and, of course, the double drive-through. So they're coming to Addison and Kimball. It's a pretty popular, busy intersection there. Many Cub fans will probably hit that one, right? Dick Portillo started that business, you know, from his little hot dog trailer in Villa Park in 1963. Now they have 60 restaurants across the U.S. Dick is a consultant. They sold for something like $1 billion. Does that depress you, or does that make you feel good that there's a success story like that?
No, it's a great success story. I'm trying to wonder, because I drive Addison a lot,
mm-hmm,
and I'm just trying to wonder what the traffic congestion will be like around Addison and Kimball.
Yeah, especially when the Cubs are playing, too, right? Because you get a lot of folks coming off the Kennedy right there.
Right.
They should just put the beef bus there. The Portillo's beef bus.
Yeah, that's right. They have that truck now, don't they?
Instead.
Let's check in with Orion Samuelson. Hey, Orion, good morning. What's on your mind today?
Well, they had a frost warning here in the desert in Scottsdale, Arizona. Temperatures getting down into the upper 30s this morning, and that's kind of unusual this time of the year because they're getting ready for spring training to get underway very shortly. And I do have a message for Dave Bennett. We had dinner at an Italian restaurant that was introduced to us by Ron Santo years ago. And when we were there a couple of nights ago, the owner, Leo, who came here from Italy and opened a restaurant in Scottsdale, said, "Is your sports guy and your morning people coming back?" Because we all had dinner there a couple of years ago. And so a message for Dave, they're expecting you. So if you're coming out here for spring training, we'll do that dinner at Tutti Santi.
Well, Dave unfortunately just walked out of the studio, but I think maybe that's because he knew you were going to talk about that restaurant and he owes them some money. Could that be?
Well, it could be, although I think I picked up the check last time.
Okay.
It was Mr. Cochran, and before that, Uncle Bobby ate there with me at the Tutti Santi. And so it has a lot of memories, I think, for us, and looking forward to getting back there. But we got through the golf tournament, the Phoenix Open, okay, and unbelievable the number of people that come to that. And that's over, so now they're getting ready for spring training. Meanwhile, in agriculture, a couple of notes this morning. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association, those are the cowboys and the cowgirls. They're gathering today as opening day for their annual convention, San Antonio, Texas. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue will be speaking at the opening session today. And then the other note that brings back memories, I'm sure for a lot of our listeners, because we talked about this many, many times going back to Uncle Bobby days, the Tremendous Fruit Farm in Eau Claire, Michigan, famous for the pick your own apples. As a matter of fact, you could rent a tree for the season, and you could come visit the tree while it was growing, and you could have picnics under the tree. It was probably one of the first operations of that kind in the country. But Herb Teichman, who was second generation on that farm, passed away in the past year. And Bill Teichman, the son who was running the operation, was bitten by a mosquito. The I can't go through the terminology, but a mosquito, the triple E encephalitis mosquito, and it has left him uncommunicative, and so they have to sell the farm. Sell the U-Pick Orchard, and they're going to do that at an auction on March 20th. So, Bob, if you wanted to get into the orchard industry in southwestern Michigan, famous for the industry there for cherries, peaches, and apples, March 20th, they'll be selling 80 acres, a retail store, and potentially the Tremendous brand name will all be auctioned off on the 20th, and then the next day they'll auction all of the equipment and machinery needed to operate the farm and the retail location. And so if you want me to let them know you're going to bid, Bob, I'll be happy to pass that along.
Yeah, I think the family farmers have enough problems without me getting into that area. And I'd be afraid, unless you did it with me. I'd make you my foreman.
I'd come out and pick the apples.
I'd eat them.
The other thing they had was the International Cherry Pit Spitting Contest. They would do that on the 4th of July, and people would come from various countries in the world to compete to see who could spit a cherry pit the longest distance.
You know, this reminds me of when I was a kid listening to you, Orion, and I wouldn't have the faintest idea what you were talking about, but whatever you said made me feel good about being in the Midwest. It just seemed right, even when I didn't know all the terminology. Hey, I wanted to ask you about this story that broke in the past week, almost a year after Burger King rolled out its plant-based Impossible Whopper. Kentucky Fried Chicken became the first major fast food chain to introduce a plant-based chicken product to its stores. What do you think about that?
Leave the food chain for meat and poultry and all that to the farmers who produce it. And as one farmer told me, he said, you know, they're talking about turning plants into fake meat. I call it laboratory meat because it contains, I think, about 20 different ingredients. Some of them I can't even pronounce. There will never be an Impossible Whopper on the Samuelson dinner plate. Never. And because as the one rancher told me, you know, they say that's a tremendous step forward. And then he said, but cattle have been turning grass into meat for a long time. So I'm going to leave it up to the cattle to produce it. And I'll have my vegetables in the salad.
Well, we were talking about this the other day, and a number of people texted because I said, I don't know why anybody would want to eat that instead of the real thing. And then a number of folks commented that vegans are vegan for many reasons. Some are in it for health, but a lot of them are in it because of the animal cruelty issue and environmental issues. So I'm sure you get that, right?
Yeah, I do. But it's part of the food chain. And I'll take the real stuff rather than the laboratory fake meat. So you won't find it on my dinner plate as long as I'm alive.
Which we hope will be a long, long time. There's Orion out west. And you know what? Don't complain about your frosty temperatures this morning, Orion, because you don't have a few inches of snow on the way like we do.
So right. Yep.
There you go.
Here the snow will occur at the 5,000-foot level, but below that, no snow out here.
Yeah, so. The ski resorts are happy this,
you
this,
bet they
this
are.
Spring. It's going to be a good season for them out there. Always, yes, always good to talk to you, my friend. You have a good day.
And you do the same, and don't hurt your back shoveling.
Thanks for the tip. Let's get Steve Grzanich in here now with the market outlook this morning, Steve.
And Bob, sponsored by Associated Bank, here's a couple of things that could move the markets today. The ADP private payroll jobs report is out this morning. Economists see job creation falling. They're forecasting 142,000 private sector jobs created in January. That would be down from about 202,000 new jobs in December. We'll get those numbers at about 7:30 this morning, along with import and export prices for December. Analysts forecasting $258 billion in import prices and $209 billion in export prices. A busy day for earnings as well. Among the companies reporting quarterly earnings, GM, Carlyle Group, Merck, Spotify, GoPro, Peloton, Qualcomm, and Yum China. Just a few things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, February the 5th.
Coming up on 6:10, seems like the whole world is on the keto diet. I won't call it fake ice cream. Got a text from 815. Keto ice cream uses real cream from real cows. It just doesn't have all of the sugar that regular ice cream has. Not everyone is on the ketogenic diet for weight. My daughter is on it for epilepsy. You know, that's how it first came to everybody's attention as helping people with epilepsy. And there's a story today. We alluded to this earlier. Keto dieters have another dessert option without breaking their regime. Halo Top announced the introduction of its new series of keto ice cream. 7 flavors: peanut butter, chocolate, berry swirl, jelly donut, chocolate cheesecake, caramel butter pecan, banana pie, and white chocolate macadamia nut. Sound good?
Is that different than the regular Halo Top ice cream?
Yeah, they the keto series is lower in calories. And if you're on keto, and I know because my wife is, it's all about almost no sugar and very, very little in the way of carbs. This ice cream includes ultra-filtered skim milk. The pints have net carbs ranging from 5 to 10 grams, calories from 410 to 630, and protein from 17 to 22 grams. They say their brand is focused on making delicious dessert that everyone can feel good about eating, and the new flavors allow them to do that. And people who are limiting their sugar intake and carb intake will enjoy the Halo Top. There's other companies that have come out with similar ice cream products in recent years. As I've said, I'm on the Edo diet, not the keto diet. I eat everything. But this is good news for folks on keto, and everybody seems to be on that. It's very popular.
Yeah, it is. Have you had the Halo Top
ice
cream, whatever they have? Because we have some, and it's not bad. I mean, it's pretty good.
Not bad, pretty
might
good.
Be,
higher praise you're not going to hear.
No, okay. But it might not be like what you had last night.
Well, you know, speaking of that, somebody says since Bob, you are into soft serve ice cream, try Scooters on Belmont, just west of Ashland. They have great soft serve custard. They're currently on winter break, but will reopen the first Friday in March. Okay, I'm not a huge custard fan, but I'll try that out. I about 6 months ago, I had a soft serve attack. I had to have it like every day. I'm kind of over that now, but I still enjoy that now and then.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Now the top 6 at 6 with Bob Saras on WGN Radio.
It is 6:16, and this is when we do the top 6 stories. And here's what we think you're going to be talking about, what you need to know at this hour. With 71% of precincts counted, here's where the delayed results from Iowa's Democratic caucuses stand. Mayor Pete, 26.8% of state delegate equivalents, followed by Bernie Sanders with 25.2%. Elizabeth Warren, 18.4%, and then Joe Biden with 15.4%. Amy Klobuchar had 12.6%, rounding out the top of the field. It is unclear when the rest of those results will be released.
Now, page 2.
Roughly 2 weeks after his impeachment trial began, the president claimed the Capitol Hill spotlight on his own terms last night, delivering his third State of the Union address right in front of a Congress set to acquit him later today. The president took credit for the robust economy and what he referred to as the Great American Comeback. The president did not mention his impeachment trial, which is expected to end today with that vote in the Senate to acquit him, taking place at around 3 o'clock this afternoon, Central Time.
Page 3.
The president also awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Rush Limbaugh, who was seated next to the First Lady, Melania Trump. Rush Limbaugh recently announcing that he has advanced lung cancer.
Page 4.
Chinese health officials have raised the death toll from the month-long outbreak of the coronavirus to 490. That's a day after 65 people in the country died from the virus. Health experts are still unable to say definitively how lethal the virus is, but the mortality rate so far, about 2%, is lower than that of SARS, which is about 10%.
To whom it may concern.
Macy's plans to close 125 of their department stores over the next 3 years. The company announced the closures as part of what they say is a new strategy to stabilize profit and grow. The stores that will be closing account for about $1.4 billion in sales and were deemed the company's least productive stores. Macy's did not identify which locations will be closing, but officials said the corporate headquarters in Cincinnati will close too, along with headquarters in San Francisco and Lorain, Ohio. The sole corporate headquarters will be in New York. The company will eliminate a total of 2,000 corporate jobs. No word on what's going to happen here in Chicago. Do you still call it Marshall Fields? I like that they left the plaque on the building, the Marshall Fields plaque.
But. And they still have Frango Mints, right?
They do, but yes. They don't make them here anymore.
Yeah.
But you know, they are so good. Somebody over the holidays gave us a box of Frangos, and they were... They were pretty fresh, and I, you know, my kids, you know, they'll eat like, and growing up, they would have like a half a cookie and put it back, or, you know, if you have a box of Frangos, they'd take like one Frango. I ate like whole rows of it each time I opened the box.
Well, that's on the Edo.
Yeah, that is. That's why I'm on the Edo diet. Yeah.
Stand by for news.
And rounding out the top six at six, speaking of the Edo diet, McDonald's Shamrock Shake is coming back. You like the green milkshake? McDonald's popular mint-flavored shake will return to restaurants nationwide for the first time in 3 years, but it will also be joined by the new Oreo Shamrock McFlurry. McDonald's just announcing this morning. Both seasonal items will be available for a limited time starting February 19th. That's nearly a month before St. Patrick's Day. I haven't seen any McRib updates lately. You know, it's the bun and the onion and the pickle that gets me about that McRib. Now, I'm sure Mr. Annett is too healthy to ever have a McRib. But, you know, it seems like something that would be in the sports department, like piles of McRibs at some point.
It does seem that way.
Yeah.
Or maybe on a Sunday when Hamp and O.B. are here.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they go for the pasta.
Yeah. But anyway, there's your Shamrock Shake and your Edo commentary for this morning.
And that's the way it is.
This has been the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Sirach on WGN Radio.
Good day.
6:21, Dave, I meant to ask you about this big trade in baseball. Boston Red Sox, this is like old school, the way trades used to be, huh? Blockbuster.
It is, except the difference, Bob, is that it's seems to be salary-based, and they're giving up. The thing that's not old-fashioned, you didn't used to trade away MVPs on a regular basis, but
it's about the luxury tax. Is that what this is all about?
It's about dumping millions of dollars in salary. And yeah, getting below the luxury tax is part of it, but Mookie Betts is looking at free agency after next season. He's going to break the bank. The Dodgers bank is pretty big, so you know, he may go out there, win a World Series or get to the World Series, which they've done two of the last 3 years, and might be the element that puts them over the top, and then maybe he decides to stay out there. So, You know, there are a lot of moving parts with this thing, but you know, the one that affects Chicago the most is trading pitcher Kenta Maeda to the Minnesota Twins, who of course are the defending American League Central champs. The White Sox are going to try to overtake this year, so the Twins have made a couple of moves recently to try to strengthen themselves and withstand the push that they expect from the White Sox. So you've got that going on. David Price, who's been a very solid major league pitcher, also goes to the Dodgers, and that's a pretty expensive deal for him.
Yeah, no kidding. And what did I see this morning about Chris Bryant? That matter is still not totally resolved.
Well, I think it's. The decision has been made. The question now is, you know, what do the Cubs do? Apparently, with this deal having been made last night, people are wondering if the next shoe to drop is going to be the trade of Chris Bryant. Apparently the Washington Nationals, who lost Anthony Rendon in free agency, are again expressing some interest in that. So I think there are a lot of things that are still to be decided here. I don't think, and not just with the Cubs, but with other teams around baseball. This could be the deal that kind of triggers a number of deals. In fact, the Dodgers made one last night. After this deal, they traded Jock Peterson, one of their outfielders, to the Angels, and so because they've got Mookie Betts now, and so they were able to make another trade.
You have to be a combination labor lawyer and accountant to follow all this.
Well, I think the emphasis on accountant at this point.
The headline that caught my eye about Bryant was arbitrator rules union did not prove Bryant case versus the Cubs.
Right, which the union is disputing, but yeah, they have to live with that.
You know, we'll have to ask my nephew Judd about this Red Sox deal. Judd is now the radio voice of the Boston Bruins, so he's in town. They're playing the Blackhawks tonight.
But he was in Boston when the deal broke last night.
That had to be huge.
I'm sure the reaction was not good for the people in Boston.
I wouldn't think so. And the Blackhawks lost in overtime, but what is it about this team? They seem to wake up late in the game, don't they?
Well, they do. They got going a little too late last night, and they did get it to overtime, but then lost in OT. But again, what is Jeremy Colliton tell us all the time? Just got to get points. Get as many points as you can. They do get a point out of this. And if you look at the standings now, they got 29 games left, Bob. They are 3 points out of a wild card spot, the second wild card spot, which is now held by Calgary. They're in a three-way tie with Nashville, which won last night, beating Winnipeg in overtime. So those three teams, Nashville, Winnipeg, and the Blackhawks, are all tied. The Blackhawks have one game in hand on Calgary, which means that they've played one fewer game than the Flames have, and two fewer than Arizona, the other wild card team. You got that?
I'm trying to follow.
So they. Those
I know
teams,
there's. I know there's a good chance they can make the playoffs.
Well, they got a long way to go. Still,
it didn't look like they had any chance a while back.
Well, the key is going to be they've been really good in the second of back-to-back games. Remember, you asked Dylan Strome about that yesterday. Mm-hmm. The Blackhawks have a really good record in that second game, and they've got that second game tonight. They have it at home against Boston, which is also playing the second of back-to-back games. And then they go on the road for 5 games. They've been a pretty good road team. So they just have to kind of keep this going. And, you know, if they can continue to win at the clip they've been winning at for the past several weeks, then they'll be right there heading into the final week of the season and give themselves a chance. That's what you want.
It's getting exciting, that's for sure. 626, look around if you're behind the wheel right now. Who are the worst drivers? What kinds of cars do they drive? There's an interesting study out that is pointing the finger at certain luxury car owners as being the drivers you want to avoid. More on that coming up after the 6:30 news. By the way, does anybody know when Spike Odell is coming back from vacation? Let me know, okay? Because I'm just curious about that. Look around if you're behind the wheel right now. Do you see any cars just driving crazy, breaking traffic rules, weaving, cutting? Notice what kind of car they're driving. There's a new study out of Finland, and the study finds that argumentative and egotistical men are particularly likely to drive cars like Mercedes, Audis, or BMWs, and those same personality traits can also explain why those people are aggressive, unethical drivers. So the study looked into why high-status cars attract people who are, I don't think I can say this word here. The International Journal of Psychology actually titled this study, Why High-Status Cars Attract So Many... That's two syllables. I don't think I can... Dave, can I see
it? Let me see.
In the meantime, Mary, let's try to guess.
No, I would not use that.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, you know what I mean. What's that, Steve?
Let's see. Does it begin with an F and end with a U?
No.
No.
What?
Starts with an A. Uh-huh.
Is it a reference to a part of your body?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I know what it is.
Well, at least you didn't say it.
The research paper asked almost 2,000 car owners about their cars' wealth and consumption habits, as well as their personality traits. The result was clear. Men who drove high-end German cars had less empathy, they are more disagreeable, and they are more willing to fight. And apparently the researchers, they did this because they had noticed that drivers who broke traffic rules tended to be behind the wheel of high-status cars. But they point out not all, for example, BMW drivers are jerks. People who scored high for conscientiousness were also more likely to own luxury cars. So that kind of contradicts the findings of the study a little bit, doesn't it? Other studies had already established that high-end car owners are more likely to commit traffic violations, but there's been a debate on whether this was perhaps because of the corrupting effect of money on a person's morality. A University of Helsinki School of Social Science professor says that it may be because these cars, in addition to being flashy and expensive, are also seen as high quality.
And they stand out a lot more, too.
Yes.
So if they're doing something wrong, you'll notice them. Uh-huh. Especially like red cars. I had a red car once. I don't think I'll ever have a red car again, even though I love red cars, because they can be seen a lot easier.
And Mary, you'll be interested in this. The study did not find that disagreeable women were drawn to high-status cars. They said that kind of car is not such a status symbol for women. Saying that maybe women have other stuff that they can show off with, you know, like shoes.
Jewelry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't need the car.
I have noticed, though, that that women are now on a par with men. It used to be that you'd see somebody like driving crazy in front of you or tailgating, and it would always be a guy behind the wheel. But now... you're right up there with the men, Mary. That's my unscientific study.
You're not one of those that says, crazy woman driver.
No, I don't say that. I say, hey, you're just like men now. That's what I say.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
Will that get me in trouble? I guess so.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, let's see, what else does the study say? That was about it, really. Why so many bad drivers have luxury cars? The new study blames disagreeable men. All right. Let us know how your study goes out there. It's 6:47. Let's get some legal advice here from Karen Conti. Conti Law. Good morning, Karen. How are you doing today?
Good, Bob. How are you doing?
All right. Talking about the State of the Union and the impeachment vote and censure. What exactly is that? Talk about censure and what may happen there, or does it have a chance of happening?
probably won't. I mean, this whole process is political as we know it. So, you know, there's no real hard standards for everything. But censure is essentially just a public reprimand. It's basically a slap on the wrist. And the Congress can be censured, people in the Congress, the judges can be censured, cabinet members. It's basically a formal statement that there's a disapproval of some conduct. It's not in the Constitution, but there's a congressional resolution that allows for this kind of thing. Interestingly, I was just looking into this. The very first censure was Alexander Hamilton of the musical fame, and he was censured all the way back then. And presidents, there have been attempts to censure presidents. Grant and Tyler, Nixon, even Clinton, they tried to censure, but none of them have really been successful. So we have an uncensured president pretty much throughout history.
And what do the legal experts say about what happens when Donald Trump leaves office? Where do those matters stand right now?
Well, as far as prosecuting, perhaps, is that what you're asking?
Right. Well, what you hear about in New York State.
Yeah, I mean, you know, certainly they're not going to prosecute him for things that are happening now. And if when he leaves, they could prosecute him. You know, will they? I don't know. You know, interestingly, the allegations for the impeachment, the obstruction of justice, and the abuse of power, those things could be prosecuted when he left office. The statute of limitations would still be open on those if some prosecutor got aggressive and wanted to prosecute. Again, I'm not sure, you know, that decision is more, again, a political decision than anything else.
Let's talk a little bit about the other big news story, the coronavirus, and we hear about people getting quarantined. And if the government wants to quarantine you, do you have any say about that?
You do. You have constitutional rights, but the state police power is pretty strong. The obvious idea is, you know, you want to weigh your due process rights versus public health, and public health is usually going to win out, especially when we have something so virulent as what's going on now. But, you know, there have been historical issues with this. When we had the Ebola crisis a while ago, I don't know if you remember, there was a nurse on the East Coast who had been working down in Africa, and they were quarantining her, and she was, you know, asserting all of her legal rights because she was asymptomatic, ended up not having it, but they basically took away her freedom for a period of time. And as offensive as that might be to Americans, it is necessary in some cases to protect people's right to be publicly healthy.
What's on the show this weekend? Do you know yet? Karen Conti's on WGN Radio. What time are you on, Karen?
I'm on from 7 to 9, but the next couple weeks, Bob, I'm preempted by some wonderful sporting event. So I will be luxuriating in the snow in Chicago.
Sunday night sports, all right.
Blackhawks this week.
That's right. We're going for the playoffs, Karen. Sorry about that.
It's all about me, Bob.
That's it. Karen Conti, Conti Law. Thanks for checking in with us, Karen.
All right. Have a good one.
Let's take a minute or two to catch up on some of your feedback in the mailbox. And I should mention this, I always forget. Email us at bobshow@wgnradio.com. And if you want to text us, it's the same number as the phone number, 312-981-7200. Thanks to, let's see who sent this, D, for the kind words on your email, D, and also Linda. Here's one from someone named Bob. Hi there, did you know that the first form of softball was invented in Chicago? Yes, it was around Thanksgiving. I tell the story every year. Basically, they wrapped up, I forget what it was that they wrapped up to play inside, and it became the game of softball. I don't want to go through the whole story now. I saved that for Thanksgiving week. But yes, I did know that, of course. And then we were talking about napping the other day here, and how long a nap should be, and basically the experts were saying you don't want to nap more than about 20 or 30 minutes. And then somebody from 847 texted us, drink a large glass of water right before taking a nap. 20 to 30 minutes later, you will be awake. Don't worry. Okay, got that. 6:52 right now. And a little later on, we'll get my nephew on the phone here because he's in town with the Boston Bruins, Judd. And you may remember him from radio in Chicago sports and WGN and part of the Cubs broadcast team and then Blackhawks pregame and postgame. And now he's the voice of the Bruins. So they're in town. Big game tonight with the Blackhawks. And so what's the deal, by the way, Dave, with Corey Crawford now? He's been looking good lately, hasn't he?
Yeah, he kept him in the game last night. So he got the start.
But he's not starting tonight? Is that what I heard?
Well, generally, they'll go different guys on back-to-back nights. And we'll see if Troy heard anything different. But usually when you have back-to-back games, you will... Unless there's an injury or some other factor, you would probably try to give the guy a play the night before the break.
Yeah, I can't play back-to-back softball games anymore. Like I used to play like four a week.
Yeah.
You know, now it's one a week, and then I need the whole week to recover. Troy Murray, along with Judd, will be talking to us this morning between 8:30 and 9. So we'll check in with those two, and then we'll find out about that big what the reaction was in Boston to that big trade involving the Red Sox, because you know Judd was in Boston yesterday when the story broke.
The story broke last night. The reports probably around, I'm trying to think, probably around 7 o'clock last night. We started to see the first reports on Twitter about it, and then all of a sudden it steamrolled and the story broke. And yeah, I mean, I can't imagine Mookie Betts and David Price both going from Boston to Los Angeles to the Dodgers. And I can't imagine the reaction has been real positive in Boston.
I wouldn't think
Not that their fans aren't accepting and forgiving there.
Right. Yeah, I know. And as far as Chicago baseball is concerned, it's spring training time.
Yeah, next week. Pitchers and catchers
they're heading out there.
Heading out. The equipment trucks are already on their way.
Yeah,
I saw that. They're not there already. So, yeah, it's here.
And then the Cubs-Sox series, they play out in Arizona this year. And what's the date on that? March?
Well, they play a few games in Arizona. The one we were talking about that we
the,
have.
The Wintrust series?
Yeah, that's, I believe, the 13th of
that's
March.
That's it, yeah. And by the way, if
Friday
you wanna,
the 13th.
Want to get in on that contest and win a trip out there, just go to WGNradio.com/contest. So is there any word on whether or not anybody here from the morning show is going to take a trip to Arizona for that, or London for the Cubs-Cardinals game, or maybe Iowa for the Sox Field of Dreams
well,
game?
I'd say we're probably not going to London. I think that's a pretty safe bet. As the new morning show host, Bob, I think right now you've got probably the most clout among any of us.
You think I can take advantage of the honeymoon period?
Yeah, this would be the time to get in there, and
because pretty soon they're not gonna acquiesce to any of my requests. So if I need like paper clips or something, I gotta ask fast.
Well, I got some paper clips if you need. I wouldn't even ask them, but I think this is the time where you could go to management and say, "Hey, I'm the new guy here. I really think we should do the show from spring training. We are the White Sox flagship station."
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I think it makes a lot of sense.
I say just go for London first. Just I've got to go for the big one.
Yeah, you know what, Mary, you got a good point because I've got to be more aggressive. I, you know, because here's how I've been operating lately. Everybody's been very nice to me, and I've been so somebody will say something nice to me from management, and then I run out of the building because I think to myself because I'm this is sort of the way I'm a glass half empty guy. So I think don't stay any longer because you're going to hear something bad. Get out. So but instead of doing that, maybe I ought to. Just when they say something nice, I ought to ask for something.
Right.
Take advantage of spring training.
I don't think we're going to London. Again, we're the White Sox station.
No, the Sox aren't going to London, so
you might want to keep that in mind.
Field of Dreams would really work out.
Yeah, Field of Dreams, okay. I think that would be great.
That would be
cool.
Do
the show out there and
probably
have to book a hotel room last week because it's in Iowa.
Yeah, we're owned by a big company at Nextstar. They got clout. They can get whatever they want.
Out there.
For sure. Yeah,
right.
Television stations.
Mm-hmm. Sure, we can find a nice bed and breakfast we can all stay at.
Yeah, and Dave, you could do some TV work while you're there. Do you still appear on Channel 9 now and then?
Yeah, I haven't lately, but I mean, I haven't been told I'm not.
Want me to call somebody over there?
No, that's okay.
Use my clout. 7:09, time to get some extremely local news, courtesy Block Club Chicago. Seamus Toomey is with us. Good morning, Seamus. How are you today?
Good morning, Bob. I'm doing great. Thanks.
We've got the NBA All-Star Game coming, not this weekend, but the next weekend. And you've got a story about Chance the Rapper.
Yeah, this is cool. Chance is doing the halftime show for the All-Star Game, and he's bringing along with him the South Shore Drill Team, which I think is a great opportunity for one of the cooler organizations in Chicago. You know, I always think when you're going to a parade, if you don't stop and watch the Jesse White Tumblers,
yep,
and the South Shore Drill Team, you're missing the parade.
Yeah, and the South Shore Drill Team does not get as much publicity as the Jesse White Tumblers, do they?
No, but they are. I mean, it's hard to argue, you know, which is more exciting, but they're equal, to in my opinion, because they bring so much energy. They crank up the music. Their routines are always flawless. Like, if I've never seen one of those guys drop the spinning rifle or anything like that, and they work really hard at it. You know, in our story, they say they practice up to 6 hours a day, and they usually start to slow down after the Bud Billiken parade. That's sort of one of their big events of the year, and they kept practicing this year, and they were all wondering, hey, why are we still doing this? Don't we usually gear up for the winter competitions? Because this was all in the works, but they didn't tell the kids that they were going to be at the All-Star Game until Monday, and they surprised them, and it went over huge. They're really excited. You know, they get the world will see this now. Plus, they get, you know, likely will get to meet Chance and hang out with them, and it's just a really cool spotlight for a great program that's been around for 40 years now.
So great for the kids, great for our city. So that drill team will perform twice at the All-Star Game festivities. Rising Star Challenge on the 14th. I know they'll be there. That's a good story. Let's get some real estate news now from Andersonville. What's going on there?
There's a giant castle in Andersonville. You know, we're fascinated by castle stories, especially when they go on sale. This is called the Castle on Berwyn. It's at 1430 West Berwyn, and it just hit the market for the first time in 40 years. The couple that had lived there since the 1970s have decided to put it on the market. So here's your chance, Bob. You can move to Edgewater. It's it's enormous. It's a huge graystone. It was built in 1906 by the architect George Pfeiffer, and I was looking up the history on who he built it for, and it was adjoining lots. It was the John and Peter Christensen, and they bought these lots and they built these huge castles on there, and I was hoping when I looked it up that John and Peter Christensen were going to be newsmen, you know, that could afford to build a castle, or, you know, nonprofit newsmen. No. They started as barbers, though, which is interesting to our barber community out there. But then they went on to become meatpacking moguls. So I think that's probably where the money came from for the mansion.
That's at 1430 West Berwyn. I don't know what's going on today, but earlier this morning, Orion Samuelson tried to sell me a farm. Now you're trying to get me to buy this castle in Anderson. By the way, speaking of that, somebody emailed us here about extremely local news, and you mentioned a barber shop, and this person said a couple of my dad's friends were commenting about a place on the north side they've been going to since the 50s, Joe's Barber Shop and Bob Inn on Fullerton. I looked up both on YouTube, found nothing. I understand Joe is still there cutting hair. My dad saw a picture and remembered him. Maybe your extremely local news reporter can check them out before they disappear like all other places that make Chicago unique. Yeah, okay, get on that, will you?
That sounds great. We'll dispatch someone this morning. You know, we're not afraid to write a story about, you know, a 39th anniversary or a 37th anniversary, just as long as we can feature a cool local business.
Attaboy. All right, let's get in one more story here before we take a quick break and then get Lynn Sweet on to talk about what happened at the State of the Union. In Pullman, this is a very historic tower, isn't it? The clock tower.
You would recognize the pictures of this if you look them up, or if you've ever been down to Pullman. This is the Pullman Clock Tower and Administration Building. It was the headquarters of the Pullman Company back when, you know, George Pullman was building his model community down there. It is on the rise. It actually almost burned to the ground in the late 90s. It's been a shell of its former self since then. The structure survived, but they're looking to
rehab it. And actually, then President Obama made it a national monument, the whole district. It's called the Pullman National Monument now. And that opened a bunch of funding to help restore it. So some of that funding came down just last week, about $5.5 million to build the visitor center within that building. So a lot of the exterior rehab has been done. This is at about 111th and Cottage Grove. But now they're going to start working on the interior, and I've seen some of the renderings of it, and it's huge ceilings, and lots of history from the Pullman era, and it's going to be great. That's that big red brick building mm-hmm. down there with the soaring clock tower. It's really a centerpiece of the community, and they're hoping it's going to be an anchor to help bring people down there.
It's a great area to tour. Check with the Architecture Foundation because they have tours there, and it's really something many Chicagoans miss or don't know about, the historic Pullman District. Seamus Toomey from Block Club Chicago. Thanks as always, Seamus. Talk to you folks tomorrow.
All right. Thanks for having us.
Lynn Sweet is the Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief for the Sun-Times, and she's with us this morning. Hello. Good to talk to you, Lynn. Good morning. How you doing?
Good to talk to you.
And listen, I want you to make me feel better. Say something to make me feel better, because I'm watching the State of the Union, and I'm sure no matter whose side you're on, you know what I mean when I say it's depressing that we're not civil anymore, this division we have in this country. Can you offer any hope, any optimism? Is there any bright spot anywhere there in Washington?
Well, I think the optimism is the country gets through. This is a historic outlier place that we're at in our history, because the president, I'll use your words, kind of no matter what you think of him, is an asymmetric president in how he sees his office and how he operates. So we get through it because the United States gets through everything. This is a very tough, polarizing, divisive time before the election. I think the summary of where we're at is, could it be so, it's so visual, where Donald Trump refused to shake Nancy Pelosi's hand. She's the House Speaker at the State of the Union last night, and then she tore up his speech at the very end. That is a encapsulation of the tough place we're in right now, exacerbated by the seemingly inability of any other political forces to be able to surface to bring us into another era at this time.
Lynn, you've been in D.C. For a long time. You remember the days when they would be fighting, the president would be fighting with the opposition all day, and then at night they'd go out for cocktails together. What happened to us?
Well, the fear of primaries for people on the who have swing districts have helped drive polarization to the left and to the right. The other forces at work, well, we have not enough time, I think, to go into everything, Bob, because it's not one answer. It's not one thing that drove us to this point in time where people wanted to have Donald Trump as the president. Now, we have a reevaluation going on. It's called an election. So when you kind of ask me what's to become of this, I won't know. You won't know, I think, until we know more and to get deeper in the election, especially what Democrat will surface to take on President Trump.
Right. I knew there was going to be trouble last night when, right at the beginning, when Nancy Pelosi introduced the president. Now, usually there's more of a salutation there. Isn't the language usually something about I have the pleasure, the high honor? And she didn't do any of that, did she?
Well, I would have to go back and see the exact language. The beginning, it was very ceremonial. The beginning of the speech, it's a pageantry. The way the vice president walks in, the Supreme Court walks in, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the cabinet members, then the senators, then the president. And so I think the beginning was more than however the speaker introduced him. I was in the gallery for the entire time and saw it all, and you would not know, just sitting there, that you were about to listen and were listening to a president who had been impeached and was talking to the House. So when you think of this historic day, in a few hours, President Trump is going to be acquitted of charges of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Those charges started in the very House that he spoke to last night. Yeah. Where, when you think of it, and here's one thing to think about, Bob, the Democrats in the House are the ones who impeached him, but most of them showed up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when you ask what's the road ahead, people show up.
Mm-hmm.
Mayor Lori Lightfoot showed up. People want to figure out ways to make government work.
What else did you notice in the gallery that we didn't see on television last night?
Well, actually, the dirty secret is you see more on TV because you get close-ups from the cameras in a way that we couldn't. But I sat not far from Rush Limbaugh, mm-hmm. and it was just really interesting to watch him. He sat next to Melania Trump. As a lot of our listeners know, he was surprised. He got a surprise gift of the Medal of Freedom from the president, meaning it was not only announced, but it's like, whoa, let's pull back the curtains, get the medal. Melania Trump put it on, and he was done. In a way, Rush Limbaugh was shortchanged of the usual ceremony that Medal of Freedom honors winners get. Maybe he'll be included in the next batch, because you never really knew what he did to earn that medal. And usually when these medals are distributed, you find out what is the accomplishment that the president is taking note of. So I guess that was part of the reality show aspect mm-hmm. of the night. But I did pay attention to Rush. He has he was subdued for all the bombast that you see on the show, and when you watch it on TV, the televised part of the show, he's moving around and he's very animated. He sat there really. If you didn't know, it was Rush Limbaugh. He didn't do or say anything all that unusual. I mean, in the end, he was sitting there with the medal around his neck. And he was seemed very subdued, except for the emotional moment when he got the medal.
Lynn, we talked to your counterpart at the Tribune in Washington, D.C., Clarence Page, a couple weeks ago here, and he mentioned how out of touch people in D.C. are compared with the rest of the country. Do you feel that, too, as you go back and forth between Washington and Chicago, that in the Beltway there's a certain type of thinking and a certain focus on impeachment and other matters, and it's entirely different and disconnected from the rest of us in the country?
No, I don't think so. I adore Clarence, but the difference is that people in Washington are paid to pay attention. So of course we pay attention. Or there's journalists, there's people who work on the Hill, there's people who work for members of Congress involved in the impeachment proceedings, either the hearings in the House or in the Senate. So I don't know if I went to go get my groceries at the Safeway here, if people are paying any more or less attention than in Chicago. But what is alike in these two cities is that these are blue bubbles, where that is to me a little more telling. Now, having said that, when I go to the gym and here, there's always in my gym MSNBC or CNN on. There's always one of the news cables on. I don't know if that would be true if we went to gyms in Chicago, and I visit two other gyms. There's always cable news on, no matter when you go. So that would be maybe one way of saying we pay more attention to what's going on than the city. But I think what is always true is that people have busy lives, kids, things to do, jobs to deal with, hobbies, sports,
Yeah,
so
other things.
People do that. Mm-hmm. Pay attention to this.
Yeah, and you got out of Washington, and you probably would see Fox News Channel on more than you do there in D.C. Lynn Sweet, Washington Bureau Chief of the Sun-Times, online and in the paper today. Interesting column about Mayor Lightfoot going to that speech. Lynn, as always, great checking in with you. Hope to talk to you again down the road soon.
Sure, Bob. Take care.
You too. Who needs relationship advice? Show of hands? Yeah, everybody. That's what I thought. That's why from time to time we like to check in with relationship expert Bella Gandhi from the Smart Dating Academy. You see her on ABC's Good Morning America, and you hear her right now. Good morning, Bella. How you doing?
Hey, Bob. Good morning.
Do we have to get something for Valentine's Day for our mates? Here comes the pressure, but I guess we need to do something, don't we?
What do you guys normally do on Valentine's Day?
Try to avoid going out to a restaurant that's too crowded, but a card usually, and you know, some pleasantries. I've been married 20 years. That's what happens.
Some general pleasantries. Good morning, Marianne. How are you? Uh-huh. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Now, what are the experts?
You want to get some good points with your partners. Acknowledge it. Even though people roll their eyes at Valentine's Day, it's the second most significant retail holiday in this country, believe it or not, at this point. The average person spends $100 on it. So you don't have to go out and break the bank, but do something nice for your significant other. If you're in a brand new dating relationship and you've been on just a couple of dates, acknowledge it with something small, right? A card, a book, like Bob's saying, you know, a playlist. And if you've been dating for more than 3 months, or if you've been married for 20 plus years, do something thoughtful for your partner.
And I know you have a list of do's and don'ts. So what shouldn't we do?
Well, don't buy self-help gifts for Valentine's Day. Even if your partner says, you know, I'd really like to get in shape, you know, don't buy them a gym membership. Just do something that says, I love you exactly as you are. That is your best bet.
Note to self, do not buy vacuum cleaner for wife for Valentine's Day.
Right. Not a time to correct their flaws and weaknesses.
And what happens if you're single? I mean, there's too much pressure, isn't there?
Pressure and sadness on Valentine's Day. It can be a reminder for people that want to be coupled up, that here's just another day where I don't have what I want. Well, you know what? I want you guys that are single and maybe feeling a little bit of that pang of sadness to turn it around and get into your space of gratitude. Look at all the things you do have, and then set up a plan for yourself so you're not sitting at home alone being sad. Grab all your pals, go out and do something fun together. Maybe you love steak dinner. Maybe you like Italian. You're a wino. Whatever you want to do, go out and get a group of people that you can celebrate with and have fun.
I want to talk to you about a list that I came across recently of important things to talk about to keep a relationship happy. And one of the things on the list I have a problem with. So I want to, one more thing about Valentine's Day. We're talking to someone you see on ABC's Good Morning America, Bella Gandhi. She has the Smart Dating Academy, and I know on your list, and you should talk about this for a minute because this is good, especially if you don't have anything to do on Valentine's Day. Volunteering is a great idea, or visiting someone, isn't it?
Yeah, when we're in a place of giving, we always feel better. Going out to volunteer, maybe you've got a favorite charity, go in, spend some time there this week or on Valentine's Day. Or I love that idea. Go and visit someone that you haven't seen before or seen in a long time. Maybe it's a grandparent that's in a nursing home. Maybe it's an old friend that you've been wishing you wanted to reconnect with. But go do that. Our relationships define us, and feeling that closeness to somebody can definitely put you in a good spirit.
Right. We all know somebody who needs help, maybe somebody who's ill, and of course there's so many charities out there that can use you. I like that. So let me run this by you. There is an article recently about important things to talk about to keep a relationship happy. And one of the things mentioned in this Bella was talking about your day. Let me read this to you, and then I'll tell you what I think. I want to hear your take on this. So how is your day? Sounds cliche, right? Well, yes, but that doesn't mean it's not important. Asking about your partner's day is a way to tell them that you care what their life was like when you're not around. It means you're curious about their world. The key is not leaving it at that question. Press for context. Understand the nuance. Listen. And when you're asked, no pleading the fifth. Think of something to say. Start a conversation. Invite them into your world. But what happens if you're done at work and you don't want to talk about work? You know, you just want to unwind and do something else. What about that?
That's totally fine. And it sounds like the article says, ask your spouse how their day was. Right? So the best thing to do, and I can absolutely be like this, I don't want to talk about the day. I'll come home and I'll ask my husband, how was your day? And it gets me off the hook from thinking about my day, talking about my day, and then I can be totally present and listen to his day and then ask him for more details about what happened.
Yeah, but then what happens when he says, tell me about your day, and you don't feel like talking about it? Then what do?
Then you can say, you know what? My day was a day. You know what I want to talk about is where we're going to go to dinner on Saturday night.
Okay. So
I'm a big fan of redirecting.
Yeah, that's a good talent. So your business, the Smart Dating Academy, what happens around Valentine's Day and leading up to it? What do you hear from people?
A lot of people ask me, should I be going out? Should I go out on a first date on Valentine's Day? You know, and I know people that have been out on first dates on Valentine's Day. So if it sounds good to you and the person sounds fine that maybe you're swiping with or texting with or that you met on the L, then say yes. Just have a casual date on Valentine's Day. You don't need to do an 8-hour epic date. Just meet out for a drink from 6 to 7:30. First dates should be short and sweet.
As far as the Smart Dating Academy and other services like that, what types of people are on those services now? What age group mainly? Who are they?
Well, at Smart Dating Academy, we've served people as, you know, young as in their 20s, all the way their 50s, their 60s, and their 70s, because people want, you know, more than needing dates, there's an abundance of people on dating apps and sites. It's really understanding who to pick, who's right for you, who the scammers are and the bad people, and that's what our service does. We're like, you know, somebody said we're like the Harvard of dating, going to learn how to do this the right way.
And so is this your Super Bowl season heading into Valentine's Day?
Yeah, we're still in the middle of peak dating season, believe it or not, which started December 26th, which officially ends on Valentine's Day. But this is when people are most active online and in real life from a dating perspective because it's driven by New Year's resolutions, right? So the perfect bookend to that is Valentine's Day.
Gotcha. All right. There you go. There is your advice for the week from Bella Gandhi, Smart Dating Academy, and ABC's Good Morning America. Always good to talk to you, Bella.
Great to talk to you, too. In fact, on Saturday morning, if you turn on GMA, Good Morning America on ABC, you'll see us do a deserving makeover for a single mom in the South Suburbs.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll be watching.
All right. Have a great day.
You, too. Talk to you soon. It's 7:52 right now. I want to follow up on what we talked about during our Extremely Local News segment. The South Shore Drill Team will perform with Chance the Rapper during the NBA All-Star Weekend. And they're actually going to perform twice. They're going to do something at the Rising Stars Challenge on Valentine's Day, February 14th. And then 2 days later, at halftime of the All-Star Game, they will be on stage with Chance. So something really cool for our city and the South Shore Drill Team. And that is the big All-Star Weekend, which is, let's see, we got the Oscars this weekend and then the All-Star Weekend.
And the Rising Stars Challenge is at Wintrust Arena. A lot of the activities will be at the United Center, but they're using both. So it's kind of cool. You have two venues downtown where the events are going to be held. And, of course, Saturday they've got the All-Star Saturday night with the three-point contest and the slam dunk contest, and that's at the United Center. Then the game is at the UC on Sunday.
And I think the tickets are very expensive for the game. And they're
very hard to get.
But you can get into some of the other activities during the weekend. I know there was one ticket, and every year I know those become available. It was like $20 for this event over at Navy Pier that's going to have celebrities and some basketball folks, and fans can mingle with them. So if you check out online or wherever you want to get your information on the NBA All-Star Weekend, you still can partake of some of the activities, but, you know, as far as going to the game itself, I mean, my daughter keeps asking me for tickets to the game, and so, you know, I said I'd talk to Dave Ennett about it, but I don't know. You know,
yeah, I would say it's not looking good at the moment.
Yeah, but what a great thing for Chicago, huh?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it's always great when you have a big event like this and brings a lot of attention to the city. And I think this will be a special All-Star Weekend in the light of what's happened the last couple of weeks in the NBA with the death of Kobe Bryant. I think this is going to be kind of dedicated to him. And yeah, I think it's great for the city to have a big event.
Last time the NBA All-Star Game was here would have been the Chicago Stadium, probably, right?
It was. It was at Chicago Stadium, and it was that was when Michael Jordan won the slam dunk contest.
Right. I remember that.
He and Dominic Wilkins were the main combatants.
Coming up in the next hour, we'll talk hockey with Troy Murray, and also we'll get my nephew Judd on the line, too, who now does the Boston Bruins games. That should be fun. We'll get Judd's take on not only the Bruins and hockey, but the big Boston Red Sox trade, which I'm sure the people in Boston are buzzing about that. It's making news everywhere.
Yeah, it is. The trade of Mookie Betts and David Price to the Dodgers. Is I have to ask you a personal question.
Sure.
Like at Thanksgiving dinner, is Judd as intense as he is professionally?
Yeah. Yes, he is. Okay. I mean, not that he isn't a lot of fun.
Oh, he's a wonderful guy, but he's very intense. That's why he's been so successful.
he's wound tighter than me. He's a little more high strung.
I would say that's a safe statement.
That's how my brother was, yeah. But I'll tell you something. I used to listen to him when he was doing like the post-game Blackhawk show on this station, and he'd be taking calls, and I was always amazed. You know, people would ask him the most obscure question about the most obscure hockey player, and he would know everything about everything.
Oh, no question.
I mean, and that was always his first love, too, hockey, even though he did a great job with Pat Hughes and Ron Santo and later Ron Coomer on the Cubs games. But, I mean, hockey, he just loves hockey and knows it so well. And I know he's having a good time in Boston, and the Boston people like him. And if he can't be in Chicago covering sports, Boston's the place to be.
It is. Bruins are another original six franchise. And yeah, I mean, it's a great gig.
Coming up, we'll check in with Dean Richards for our entertainment report. And Dean has an explanation from Jay-Z that should be interesting. Also, some Star Wars news and a Beach Boys boycott he'll talk about. Plus, a very popular cable show got canceled. We'll get into all that coming up momentarily. Time to check in with Dean Richards and get the entertainment stories of the day. How you doing, Dean?
I am well today. Everything is good, despite everything busy going on in the world right now. Entertainment lives on.
Yes, it does. And we have an explanation today from Jay-Z about the Super Bowl national anthem. What's he saying?
Yeah, this is related to the story that I had on Monday, in which TMZ's cameras caught Jay-Z and Beyonce and their little daughter all sitting down during the national anthem, and everybody thought that they were making a big political statement. Jay-Z was at Columbia University yesterday, did a lecture and a Q&A, and he was asked whether or not this was a political statement, and he says it was not. He said that he would have never planned a protest like that, especially one with his daughter, that he is the producer of all the entertainment aspects of the Super Bowl, and he says, I was working, that he was focused on how everything was looking and sounding at the moment. So that's the excuse that he gives. I don't know how you can't you know, take a minute and a half of your precious time just to stand up out of respect, even while you're working.
Yeah, but I'm glad to hear that anyway, that he wasn't. At least he says he wasn't trying to make a statement, yeah. So I assume he wasn't.
Yeah, we'll give him that much. But
yes, happy
stand
to.
Stand up. It literally is a minute and a half.
And the Star Wars news today, what's going on with that?
Yeah, this is good. We all thought that we were kind of done with Star Wars after the last movie, Rise of Skywalker, came out. And yesterday, Disney chairman Bob Iger gave a talk in which he said that the future is alive and well, and it all lies in television, in the online platform Disney Plus, to be exact. Mandalorian is one of the big hits of the past year, and they say that they will be introducing more characters into the Mandalorian universe. They will be spinning those characters off into their own series, that there will be an Obi-Wan Kenobi television series on Disney Plus, and a series based on Diego Luna's character from Rogue One that will be on Disney Plus. They did say no plans for any more movies right now, although Kathleen Kennedy, who is the producer of the Star Wars movies, kind of hinted that there might be Star Wars movies still to come, in which she was talking about how there will definitely be a female director of future Star Wars projects. So maybe she was talking about some of these television series. She sort of was implying that there was going to be movies still to come. They also announced that the new season of Mandalorian is going to premiere in October of this year.
As I mentioned yesterday, I should have bought Disney stock a long time ago. We had that announcement yesterday that they're going to make a Hamilton movie, and then I saw this morning that they're reporting more than 28 million subscribers to their new streaming service, and it's up from 10 million in November. Wow.
I could have predicted this kind of success for Disney in that I also did not buy any Disney stock. I have the most uncanny bad luck when it comes to real estate investments, stock choices, you name it. If there's a bad choice to make, it'll be in the Dean Richards portfolio.
Good to know that.
Yeah.
Now, what's this Beach Boys boycott that I hear about?
This is a little weird infighting that's going on. I thought that Brian Wilson occasionally still performed with the group, but apparently this is not the case, that the band itself is now mostly comprised of Mike Love, who is one of the originals, and Al Jardine, who is one of the, I think he was one of the originals, if not one of the early members of the group, and other guys that join them from time to time. But they have a gig scheduled to perform at a convention that's going to be put on by Safari Club International, which is an international trophy hunting organization. It's an organization that you join if you want to go out on safaris and kill wild animals. And one of the other founders of the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson, has called out his former band over this, and he's urging them to not do the show, not support this group that kills innocent wild animals. He started an online petition at change.org. They have something like 120,000 signatures already on this. But he's also asking fans to stop buying, downloading, going to concerts, purchasing any kind of Beach Boys band merchandise until the band reconsiders appearing at this convention, which starts today. So it sure looks like it's going to happen today. Mike Love was asked about all of this, and he says that they are going to perform, that the current incarnation of the Beach Boys support freedom of thought and expression.
That's Mike Love and company without Brian Wilson, right?
Right.
We're going to take a quick break. Dean has an opportunity for you to get some tickets to the new Will Ferrell, Julia Louis-Dreyfus movie, and we'll get to that. Oscar predictions and some Ray Donovan news. With Dean Richards on the entertainment beat, I thought Ray Donovan was a super popular series. What happened, Dean?
Well, it's been on for 8 seasons, so that's a pretty good long run. But at the end of the last season, the star of the show, Liev Schreiber, said that he was going to leave the future of the show in the network's hands, Showtime. And I guess he didn't expect Showtime to cancel the show when he left it into their hands. But that's what happened. It was, you know, fairly popular, I guess, you know, showing a little bit of its age. But yesterday, Showtime announced that the last episode that was on, the season finale that was on a few weeks ago, is actually now the series finale. So it's all over.
Well, eight seasons, yeah, that is a pretty good run. And the way people watch TV now, a lot of folks will just binge watch all of them.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, it's the way... you know, the way that we used to watch television is has completely changed in the last couple of years. You're right. You know, people will watch a whole season of a show in two nights now.
Yeah, and I mean, I kept hearing about how good it was, and then there's so much to watch, I never got around to it. So, you know, maybe now I will. Let's go to more of your Oscar predictions that you're doing this week leading up to the Academy Awards on Sunday night.
Yeah, today I'm doing the categories of Best Animated Picture and Best Director. Let me start with Best Animated, where the nominees are How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, I Lost My Body, Toy Story 4, Klaus, and also Missing Link. Have you seen any of these?
Nope.
Makes sense that you wouldn't not necessarily see. Even Toy Story, really.
No, I haven't.
Because I think those are kind of, you know, adult movies.
Sure. Yeah, they are, for
sounds
sure.
Sounds weird when I say it's an adult movie. That
not that kind.
Sounds like Shakira and J-Lo ought to be starring in it if it's an adult movie.
But when I hear
movies
about...
for adults.
When I hear about the animated films and the documentary films and the shorts, I always want to see most of them, and then I can't. Although maybe now you can because you can find them streaming somewhere.
Yeah, almost all of them are already streaming online. But my pick for this is Toy Story 4. Pixar remains the gold standard of animation. Toy Story 4 met that very high standard that Pixar always puts out in every step of the way. And this was a really great year for animated films as well. Klaus, I Lost My Body were two very great films. If either of those also wind up winning, I would be perfectly happy with that. Personally, I'm not so sure the How to Train Your Dragon belongs in that category. But I'm a huge Pixar fan, and I think that Toy Story 4 is going to wind up being the winner there. The other category that is, I think, kind of a cinch, although it could go one of two ways, is the category of Best Director, in which Martin Scorsese is nominated for The Irishman, Todd Phillips for Joker, Sam Mendes for 1917, Quentin Tarantino for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and the South Korean director Bong Joon-ho for this very interesting movie, Parasite. And which one of these have you seen, Bob?
I didn't see 1917. I saw the rest of them, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to see 1917, though, and if you can, on a big screen, if possible, because I think that's the one that's going to win Best Director. Later in the week, I'll tell you which ones I think will win Actor, Actress, and Best Movie of the Year. And again, these are all fantastic movies. Martin Scorsese with The Irishman does sort of a master class on film directing in his very meticulous way of laying the story out. I think the thing that really killed this movie from getting more awards than it did, and it virtually got none during award season, was the length of this movie. It really turned off a lot of people. Todd Phillips' Joker was magnificently put together. That one is being rewarded through awards for Joaquin Phoenix, pretty much. Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood has been picking up awards for Brad Pitt in the movie. He'll probably win Best Screenplay, Adapted Screenplay as well. And so I think the real contest here for Best Director is going to be between Bong Joon-ho for this great movie Parasite and Sam Mendes for 1917. I'm predicting that Sam Mendes is going to be the winner for a couple of reasons. All of these movies are great. None is more creatively directed. the movie-making process, which is, you know, what the Direction Award is about, the vision of the movie, the storytelling. But the way that Sam Mendes did this, through this illusion of creating what appears to be one fluid motion through this whole shot, one continuous shot through the whole movie, is genius. It's so full of creativity. It's exactly what the Academy loves. And I think that Mendes will win that. And not to mention the fact that he won the Directors Guild Award a couple of weeks ago. And the Directors Guild might be the best indication of who wins both Best Director and Best Picture of the year. Whoever has won the DGA Award has been predicted by the DGA in all of their years since 1948, except for seven of those years. They have a remarkable record of picking the winner of both the Best Director and therefore Best Picture as well.
I've been reading, I haven't been reading all the articles about the making of 1917. I've been putting them aside because I want to go back and read them after I see the movie.
Right.
I can't wait.
That's really smart. That's really smart to not get too much information going into it, so you can go into the movie and just appreciate the movie for what it is.
Yeah, then I'm going to be curious about how they filmed it and all of that,
yeah.
And then I'll go back and look at that.
Yeah, it'll answer a lot of questions.
Good. Seeing a lot of ads and trailers for the Will Ferrell, Julia Louis-Dreyfus movie, which looks like a lot of fun. You saw it, didn't you?
I did see it.
Is it good?
I wouldn't go that far.
Oh, okay.
I think I went in thinking it was going to be a wacky comedy because of Will and Julia. And it's not. I think I would call it a dramedy. It's a story about a family who go on a skiing vacation in the Alps. And they really did shoot the movie in the Alps. I will say that it's beautifully shot. And this past weekend, I was in L.A. and talked with Will and Julia. They told me about this whole filmmaking process of being, you know, in the Alps for a month making a movie, which is amazing. But something happens in the movie which kind of shakes this family unit, shakes the relationship between husband and wife, and has them reevaluating who they are and what they want in life. And it's a movie that's going to leave you with a lot to think about. It's definitely not a yuck comedy, though. And I think my disappointment may be more with my expectation than actually what they deliver in this movie. That said, we've got a special pre-screening that's coming up this coming Monday night at a theater that's in the city. And we're giving away some tickets for it. And if you'd like to enter a random drawing that we've got for tickets that we're going to give away today at 10 o'clock in the morning, if you go to WGNTV.com/contest and put your name in the drawing, possibly win those tickets. And then we'll see what you think of the movie. That's what I always like, when people see the movie and either agree or disagree with me. What I most especially love when someone disagrees with me, when they take a paper copy of my script and they rip it in half while I'm still standing.
Yes, Dean Richards. Talk to you tomorrow.
Okay,
thanks,
bye,
Dean.
Bye.
I love giving away the station's merchandise. What do you say we give away a couple of tickets to a very funny show at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center, Noises Off? Let's do this. First person to call in with the correct answer to this question will win the tickets. A few minutes ago, Dean Richards, at the end of his entertainment report, mentioned that he enjoys it when someone disagrees with one of his movie reviews and does what right in front of him. You remember what he said? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. If I say the name Jay Shefsky, you probably don't recognize it, but you've seen his work, and I wanted to give a shout-out to Jay, who Rob Feeder mentions today very appropriately as one of Chicago television's most gifted producers. He announced his retiring from Channel 11 after 34 years. His last day is going to be the end of the month. He's going to continue to do some freelance work, but basically he's done with his full-time gig there. He has done some great specials for Channel 11 over the years, including the documentary on Our Lady of Angels School Fire, and also the Leopold and Loeb murder trial. He did that piece. He's won many Emmy Awards. He did that Jay Chicago series, and we wish him well, and we always admired Jay's work over there at Channel 11. So, Jay Shefsky, hats off to you. It's 8:42 right now, and coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk Blackhawks and more with Troy Murray, along with Dave Bennett, and a very special guest that'll be coming up. And I believe that Mike in Arlington Heights has the answer to our question. How you doing, Mike?
Hi, good.
What was it Dean mentioned at the end of his report?
He loves it when the person rips up his review right in front of his face.
Ding, ding, ding!
There you go. Congratulations. You got it. Thanks for paying attention. He didn't say anything about not shaking hands with the person. But you get the tickets to Noises Off. Catch this comedy
Sounds
favorite
good.
At Metropolis Performing Arts Center, now playing through March 14th. Get your tickets at metropolisarts.com. What are you up to today, Mike?
Just getting ready to head out to work.
And where do you work?
I'm downtown. I'm an attorney downtown.
All right, attorney at law. Okay. Well, yeah. You know what? We need more lawyers, don't we, Mike?
Yeah. There certainly is a shortage, is what I hear, but maybe I'm getting bad information.
There's a crying need. Hang on, and we'll get the information we need from you, and we'll get those tickets to you. Thanks for listening, Mike.
Oh, great. Love the show.
Thanks. Appreciate that. Call us again. And Troy Murray, sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. Good morning, Troy, from the WGN broadcast team. How you doing today?
Good, Bob. How are you?
Pretty good. I have Dave Bennett standing by. And also, since I'm still known around here as Judd Surratt's uncle, we'll say good morning to the voice of the Boston Bruins, the enemy. Hi, Judd.
Good morning. How is everybody?
Oh no, you got us both on here at the same time.
It's like old times.
All right, Troy. Before we bring in Dave for some serious sports questioning, I want to hear all of the embarrassing things about Judd. Everything he doesn't want to tell anybody about. I've got plenty of time. You want to run past 9 o'clock? Feel free. It's all yours.
Oh, I can't say anything bad about Judd. I loved working with him. I've listened to his broadcast with the Bruins. He does a fantastic job. He's got a great team to talk about. Felt bad for him last year when the Bruins weren't able to get it done in Game 7 against the Blues to get a Stanley Cup championship as a broadcaster. But love everything that Judd does, and he's a great guy.
Oh,
sorry to disappoint
exactly the way
Bob.
I wrote it.
Well, you know what? He's not a bad nephew. I'll admit that. And, Judd, do you have any secrets you want to let us in on so the Hawks can be ready for your team tonight?
Well, Bob, I got to backtrack because Troy just lied to you because there's a story in there that he could have told. Maybe if he wants to go back to some karaoke one very late night in Nashville.
Yeah, we might want to leave that one out. I think Judd better stick to his job what he's got right now.
We'll wait for the book. Yeah.
Well, speaking of late nights, you both had late nights. I Troy, what time did you guys get back from Minnesota last night?
Well, it's a good question. I think we landed about 1 o'clock.
Okay, so you're refreshed and ready to go. But it seemed like
that's all just part of the
It's part of the deal.
The players get used to it, and it is what it is. There's no advantage for this one because Boston did play at home last night. They got the victory. Blackhawks got a point, which is big. But both teams will be on an even playing field tonight.
Blackhawks kind of started slow. It seemed like. Last night, anything stand out to you? Kinda, yeah. Anything stand out to you about the way they played?
Well, let's flip the coin here and give Minnesota a ton of credit. They actually got blown out by the Boston Bruins 6-1 in their first game back out of their break. And nobody was happy. It was an embarrassing game for them. They got a bag skate after that. They had some meetings. So they were really pumped up to play the game last night. And I think the Blackhawks level just wasn't where it needed to be against a team that was really determined. And without the play of Corey Crawford through 40 minutes, they weren't going to get a point out of that one. I'll give them a lot of credit, though. though the Blackhawks battled in that third period, got a point where they probably didn't deserve it. And you never know at the end of the season whether the extra point that they lost is something that'll hurt them, or the point that they got is something that will get them into the postseason.
Judd, before you left Boston, what was the big baseball trade announced, and what are people in Boston saying about all of that?
People are not very happy that Mookie Betts has departed for Los Angeles. You know, I think for a lot of people in Boston, you know, they're trying to figure out exactly why they've had to trade such a really good player if they want to contend for this season. So that certainly generated a lot of headlines just as we were leaving town, because I could see that coming up in my Twitter feed and people talking about it during the course of last night's game when the Bruins were shutting out the Vancouver Canucks. So that's going to be a huge story throughout New England.
And Troy, when you and Judd get together, what will you talk about? Will you have a chance to visit later?
Well, I don't think the Bruins will practice this morning, and I know that the Blackhawks are not, just because of the late night of travel. So I'll have a chance to talk to Judd when we get down there, and I'm sure we'll get some good stories, some laughs about what's going on this season. And again, I say I love the time when Judd was here working with us. He's a true professional, and you know, we'll just laugh and tell some stories. Maybe we might bring up Nashville and his singing or non-singing abilities.
Or how about Monty Python?
That works too.
Well, sounds like there's more to be told.
Yeah, this is a whole other show.
We did have some laughs.
Hey, Judd, I can ask this since your uncle won't.
Sticking to the issues, I think.
Well, since you're on with us and since we do have the opportunity to work with your uncle every morning, and since he put you and Troy on the spot telling some stories, how about something about Uncle Bob?
Oh, we're out of time. Oh, just kidding.
Oh, I remember as a kid when we were first skiing, you know, the way Bob used to ski, because if memory serves, I don't think Bob took any lessons before he started to ski for the first time, and you'd ride up the lift on a run. I remember it was above Sandy Hill, which was like the first lift out in Colorado, this place we used to go to at family. You could hear people yelling from the lift as Bob was coming down, "Skier out of control!"
A little out of
Bob
control,
Bob was a
yeah.
big giant yard sale coming down the first hill.
But do you remember, I skied in a Blackhawk sweater. Do you remember that?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. There's a great picture of you.
I had a Bobby Hull number 9. That's right. I wish we had more time for stories about me, Dave. But
okay, let me get
back to
hockey.
Back to hockey, yeah.
So, Judd, obviously the Bruins have been on a great run here and have a nice little winning streak coming into Chicago. How does a team that's in the East and neck and neck with Washington for the overall lead in the National Hockey League, how are they looking at teams like the Blackhawks and what the Hawks have done here to kind of get themselves back in the picture?
Well, David, they're in a big race because the team that's right behind them in the division, the Tampa Bay Lightning, I think a lot of people expected that they were going to come out in the first half and be a lot stronger. I mean, this was a team that registered 60-plus wins last season. They got off to a slow start. Well, now they've picked it up, and they're exactly where I think a lot of people thought they would be. So I think the Bruins, they'd like to be able to keep them at bay. If you look at the Eastern Conference, there are some terrific squads. The West is a little bit different around the National Hockey League, and that's allowed the Blackhawks to stay in the hunt for a playoff spot, or at least a wild card spot in the conference. So for the Bruins, I think they look at this as a quest for another 2 points, because they've got to be able to rack up these points against these Western Conference foes. They're playing a lot of non-conference teams during the month of February. They hold only 3 division games this month. And then next month, they're going to play 8 times against the Atlantic Division. And you've got a meat grinder there, whether it's the Tampa Bay Lightning or the Florida Panthers. I know the Toronto Maple Leafs have kind of sunk here a little bit, but those are going to be some big games that the Bruins have to be able to accumulate points so you can possibly get the best matchup possible in the playoffs. I think for the Bruins up to this point in the season, listen, they played really well. What have they racked up? 32 wins this season. They're 22 games over 500. They've only lost 10 times in regulation That's the fewest in the National Hockey League. But for the first couple of months of the season, I think the head coach, Bruce Cassidy, the former Blackhawk, said that we have been in fixed mode a lot of times, but they have come out of the break and they have elevated their game. And last night against the Vancouver Canucks, they had a four-line rotation going, and it wasn't a perfect game by any stretch, but they started well. That's been their mantra all season long, and they never took their foot off the gas.
Troy Murray, one more question for you quickly. Trade deadline coming, two possible free agent goalies, lots of rumors going around with the Blackhawks. You have a prediction in that department?
You know, I really don't. It's going to be really interesting to see what the organization as a whole wants to do with both Robin Leonard and Corey Crawford, because they're unrestricted free agents after the season is over. The one thing that they looked at it in the beginning of the season, and it was because of health concerns with Corey of what has happened here the past couple seasons, they had a chance to add a goaltender like Robin Leonard to the mix and figured that, you know, if this team had that great 1-2 combination between those two guys, that they would have a much better chance of getting into the postseason. So those two goaltenders have been exactly what they would expect them to do. Corey Crawford has been playing great. Robin Leonard has really come in and been a big plus for the team. So moving forward, I think it all kind of depends maybe what happens here in the next week. As Judd was talking about Boston playing a lot of non-conference game, the Blackhawks, other than this game, are going to play teams that they're challenging for a playoff spot. You've got Winnipeg, Edmonton, Vancouver, Calgary, and Winnipeg again next week. Those are teams directly around where the Chicago Blackhawks are in the standings. So, you know, maybe that question can be answered a little bit further down the road before the trade deadline. But there's been a lot of speculation, as you said, that teams who are looking to solidify their goaltending position moving into the playoffs would be looking at the Blackhawks as a trade partner.
Thanks, Troy, and Judd Surratt. And if you're going to the United Center tonight, look for these guys and then ask them what they couldn't talk about on the radio this morning.
It's the two bald guys up in the balcony, the two Muppets.
All right. Have a good game tonight, Troy and company. And Judd, sorry, you're the enemy. But thanks for thanks for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
All you guys.
See you guys.
News is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. News coming up, and then John Williams, and he has this for us today. John?
Barry Manilow's going to join us on the show today.
No kidding.
The end. Stick around in the 11 o'clock hour. He's got a new album out. He is in his 70s. He is still writing and recording music.
Yeah, and I think it was Mr. Kelly's in Chicago with Bette Midler that really gave him his start, launched him. Okay.
Started as a jingle writer for places like McDonald's, right?
Yes,
also,
he did.
What did you think of Nancy Pelosi tearing up the speech? Great idea, you understand, but a bad idea, or hey, flat out bad idea. That's our news click. Vote at WGNradio.com. Or on the John Williams Facebook page, and we'll see what we get in just a little bit.
Yes, we will. Okey-doke. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow. John's next.